All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is that podcast where I forgot to remove the comment from the title screen. This is also the show where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight we're going to be talking about Sound of Metal, and we have a musician on, songwriter on, to talk about it with us tonight. So this should be a lot of fun. You can find the show notes and more at actualanarchy.com/239. Now, before we introduce our guest, I'm going to say hello to our co-host and hetero life mate, Robert Paul Johnson, purveyor of Trubster.com, where you can find wares and things that he has made, designed. Put it on your mugs, your coffee cups, those are the same thing, t-shirts. What's the weirdest thing you can put your art on, Robert?
You could slap it on your ass.
Well, I do that constantly, but I mean, like, you can buy from your website.
Yeah, you could buy a bumper sticker and then you can put it on your private parts.
Okay, all right, that's solid content. So, by the way, guys, we have been talking for about an hour, pre-show bonus content. We had an appearance by Mike C, multiple time guests. We've also had time with our guest Rocky talking about all sorts of funny stuff on our Patreon bonus content. So if you go to lastnighters.com/Patreon or actualanarchy.com/Patreon, you can spend some money and be able to listen to that. So I highly recommend it. It's really good stuff.
Is it, Daniel?
It's the best, Jerry.
It is. It's so good.
So Robert, what's going on? What do you want to share with our audience before we get into the Last Night Sports Show and start talking about this movie?
Well, I'm really bummed out, Daniel, because as you know, I've been getting outside a lot, and it turns out that there is a downside to going outside. You wouldn't know it, but the sun has robbed me of my white privilege, and now that I am a tanned individual, life is going to be a whole lot harder out. Allow me to tansplain something to you, melanin challenged paste merchant. So this is something that my tancestors have endured for centuries. Tanscrimination by the white man. That since
we're gonna
I
get
am
fucking
only
canceled, dude.
listen, this is true. This is true story. Since I'm barely only white passing now, you're gonna have to bear the weight of the white man's burden, and I am going to be the oppressed minority in this podcast, and you're going to be the oppressor, and I'll be the oppressed. So I'm going to be having the hard life, and then you're going to be having the privileged, wonderful, easy. I mean, I don't know what this is. Just ice cream just rain down on you whenever you want it. Sandwiches just fall from the sky. I don't know. It's just all milk and honey. Whenever you walk around, just roses just blooming in front of you or something like that. I don't know. But now that I have a hard life, it's just going to be a different dynamic on the podcast going here on. I just want to make you aware. Okay.
Okay. All right. Duly noted. Your life is now more difficult until, I don't know, October-ish, when the sun doesn't have as much of an effect on you. And then you go back to, the privileged class.
We shall see, but I don't know. This is a new experience for me. I should have listened to my ancestors. They were wise in their foreboding, their warnings of me, saying that, you know, you should probably just stay inside and maintain that privilege. But I was lured out. I was lured outside by the devil, and I'm paying the price. This is a more of a cautionary tale for you and anybody else listening that there's a downside.
Okay. All right. Well, I do recall from prior episodes that I was recommending that you slowly build up a base of tan because you are prone to burning due to your pastiness. And that was, I think, as far as I was willing to take it at that point. But now you've line stepped. And now if you do it again, I'm going to consider you a habitual line stepper, which is fine. Fine. If you want to establish that. But, I'm, of course, referring to the great Charlie Murphy bit on Chappelle's Show. But we should get into the last narrative portion of the show. What do you say?
Allow me to consult the wisdom of the ancients. They say yes.
All right, then we will do it now. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson. We are the Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com and also on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. Tonight is episode 182 of the show. It's Sound of Metal. And if we're still on the air, because some of our pre-show bonus content and earlier stuff here might have been a little bit too risque. So if you want to listen to that, go to lastnighters.com/Patreon. But tonight we're going to be doing Sound of Metal, like I said, with a musician, libertarian anarchist, and friend, Rocky Fehrenberg. He has been our guest a couple of times in the past. He was on for Smallfoot, Gremlins, and the Clint Eastwood classic, The Mule. And I'm going to add him to the stream now, and we can say hello to Mr. Rocky Fehrenberg. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience and remind them where they can find what you do, and also tell us about your new book that just came out.
Well, I'm Rocky Fehrenberg. Previous political candidate, ran a show called Noisemaker Podcast, where we interviewed independent and small-time bands and basically kind of gave them a platform to showcase their music. Been a musician for almost two decades now. I spent most of that time writing lyrics, and so most of the lyric books out there, songwriting books, they're like 300, 600 pages, even for a seasoned songwriter. It seems like you're kind of drinking from a fire hose. So I was like, well, I think it'd be really awesome to put out a very small, compact book that kind of breaks down the entry-level elements of how to write a song and how to kind of, you know, get a jump start on it and learn all the different things you need to learn to kind of get started. So put out a basically pretty small 50-page book on the songwriting and called it the Fat Free Guide to Songwriting. Oh, and Gremlins is still a better Christmas movie than Die Hard.
Sacrilege. Sacrilege.
So rude.
All right, I'm gonna pull
I just needed to be noted again. All right.
All right, noted. Noted.
He's still under that delusion. Rocky has not improved his opinion, even though he is older and supposedly wiser. He has not learned his lesson. Noted.
All right. So for those watching, you can see the cover of Rocky's book in the one of the quarter panels here because he's using that for audio.
Wow.
Yeah, we're gonna go main screen, warp, and I'm gonna go main screen even harder, warp again.
There we go.
We see the book there, and Rocky, is there a website where people can go direct to that, or should they go to our show notes page and click the link, and we'll get a 2-cent commission out of it?
Yeah, of course. No, the only place we got it is available on Amazon. Publish it through Amazon. So go over there, snag it. I'll give you guys the link. If I have it, I don't think I sent you guys anything yet. So I'm a horrible self-promoter like that.
No, it's all right. I've got a Amazon affiliate link maker that pays us, you know, the 1.5% of a percent that they pay these days. So, you know, you sell the book for what, $10? We'll see like 15 cents. It'd be great.
Right. Yeah. No, the paperback's $9.99. The ebook is $2.99. So.
Okay, even less for us. Perfect.
So buy the ebook to make sure that we can skimp as hard as we can.
That's right. Skimp
or harder. Like we were talking about before, you know, I'm sure you can probably pirate it somewhere, like stealing the intellectual property, like we were talking about before. You know, hey, once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah, that was actually a good little moment there in the pre-show bonus content. So, you know, the Patreon bonus content, highly recommended, everyone. It's usually just a couple of old guys. Not as old as the president, but a couple of guys trying to figure out technology, getting the sound work and all that stuff. But this time was actually pretty good. We actually had some substantive discussion previously. And we also had a guest appearance by Mike C of Mechanical Dream Revolution on for a few minutes, and he's always a good guy. So highly recommend his stuff and also Rocky's stuff. Anything else before we get into our discussion about this here movie?
I'm good, man. Let's do this.
All right. Motion carries.
Yeah, Daniel. Let's light this candle.
Let's light this candle. All right. So I'm going to pull up the Google description here. Let's see if there it is. All right. It's even pulled up. And Robert, can you give me a wump?
Wump.
Wump. Sound of metal. There. That's even better. That's so people can see it on screen.
That looks so good.
All right. So I've been meaning to put the logo up on our podcast for, I don't know, almost a year now. And I never like do it properly. So this is the first time. And I still don't think this was proper, but you know, it's better than nothing. So
you got to put it into your routine. There's got to be a sequence of events. And that, this is the time when you always do this and you always do that.
Well, it should be right before the Google description, right? Because that's a routine. But I'm not sure like where to throw that in. I kind of want to like reveal the show, but people already know what movie we're talking about just from the title of the episode. So kind of fucked there. But, you know, we could pretend people don't already know and like pretend it's a big surprise. Like Robert announcing.
What?
The episode
what are
tonight?
We doing, Daniel?
Womp.
Oh, mind blown.
Sound it's of metal.
It's kind of like the Pinky and the Brain ongoing gag, you know?
That's right. It could be an ongoing gag is that we suck.
What right. movie are we going to talk about today, Daniel?
Taking Over the World. What we talk about every night, Taking Over the World. That's right. I did it wrong. As per usual. All right. Well, here we go with the Google description, which is what I will read to you now. So, Sound of Metal, available on Amazon Prime. It's an Amazon Prime joint. Got 7.8 out of 10 on the IMDb, 97% Rotten Tomatoes, 82% Metacritic, 92% of Google users like it. The description is very lengthy. A heavy metal drummer's life is thrown into freefall when he begins to lose his hearing. End scene. Came out November 20 of 2020. Director is Darius Marder. Story by Darius Marder and Derek Cianfrançais. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but it's a Belgian movie, so it's probably got some kind of an accent to it. Budget of $5.4 million and a box office of $176,177.
Ouch.
Low bid. Robert, your take on the Ouch. Google description and this movie.
Yeah, they make a lot of these kind of like low budget movies that don't get any kind of media attention, don't get any kind of like advertising push, and then they just kind of die on the vine. It's unfortunate, but.
Well, this was also released mid-pandemic.
That probably didn't help things either. It's a pretty good character study film. It kind of follows a fairly standard, hero gets adverse thing happen to him. Seeks out a solution, decides to get it, has some regret, and deals with different issues along the way. It's watching it. It felt more non-standard though. It definitely took a little bit of turns. Like you're kind of used to like the Hollywood way of solving problems, and this is much more of a real life kind of thing where. Yeah, there's this guy and he loses his hearing. And what does he do? He kind of learns sign language and he hangs out with deaf people and he kind of comes to sort of accept his new life. But there's, you know, every time you undergo this traumatic change, there's going to be some pushback and he resists. You know, he's used to his old life. He understands his old life. He liked his old life. It had a lot of value and meaning to him. And losing it would be traumatic. I don't know. Have there been drummers who have lost their hearing and continue to drum? It seemed like you could still do it, right? You still feel the drums.
It's not like Def Leppard style where you lose an arm, you know.
And then you could pre-record it though. But I mean, in the movie, he was having issues taking cues from the guitarist, the lead singer lady. And so then he didn't know what to play. but he knew the songs, but I guess it was just an issue of performing live. They could have probably worked something out between them to give him the cues to know what to play. Cause it's not like he couldn't play the drums anymore, but you know, obviously there's the whole thing of him dealing with being deaf, which is what the movie mainly centers around, and coming to terms with that. It's like I said, it's more of a character study. It's more of a hero kind of evolution and accepting change. So I thought it was quite good in that sense. I mean, I wasn't blown away by the film. I thought that the time spent in the kind of deaf world to be very slow. Maybe because I'm more used to a fast paced story, I felt it was a little bit more kind of boring, but not that there wasn't a lot of good stuff there. So overall, I definitely enjoyed the way the film ended and the awkwardness of him coming back to that, wanting to be back in that, in his old world, his old life, and the disappointment he felt, the crushing disappointment with the ear implants, where he had this expectation of what they were going to do for him. And I felt that that was a little bit weird. Like, he kind of brushed off any of the doctors who were saying, now hold your expectations. This isn't going to be amazing like it was. You're going to feel some, you know, it's going to be degraded. But he was like expecting things to be great again, and they weren't. And it, overall, I thought it was a good journey that I went on. Not the movie of the year, not my favorite thing I've ever seen, but a solid film that probably deserves more than the $200,000 that it made. Yeah, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, you know, I saw this movie and it came highly acclaimed and recommended, and I think that it won some awards, best sound editing and something else, and the lead actor Riz Ahmed, he was highly acclaimed as well, and some of the training that he went through to play this role was not only drum lessons but sign language lessons and all these things, and I think he even experienced deafness for periods of time, you know, so he wouldn't be able to hear anything to like bring some authenticity to the role. And I think a lot of that kind of comes through, but I don't know if there's really much of a story here other than there's a guy who's like focused on, here's our life. We're roving in this RV, playing gigs, recovering addicts. And we play songs and we're trying to make money and trying to make it big. And he's willing to continue to pursue that despite the risk of, you know, once it's made aware, once he's made aware that he's damaging his hearing by what he's doing, he continues on, even though the doctor recommends, like, hey, you need to focus on preserving what you have left, because whatever's happening is going to continue unless you make some changes here. And he proceeds on anyway. So sort of stubborn, but also sort of like focused on, I'm going to stick to whatever my goal is, no matter what, which is sort of admirable in a way, but also a bit foolhardy, you know, very much a time preference issue where he's like not willing to step back and see the long term. You know, he wants that immediate thing. And we see that again when he wants the immediate solution of, hey, I'm going to just get these implants, bing, bang, boom, everything's good. I just got to get the 40, 50 grand. I'm all set.
Yeah, it very much reminded me of like the boxer or the MMA fighter like mentality of, I'm going to sacrifice my body. It's fine. We'll just keep going. This is what I know. This is what I enjoy doing. Maybe at the expense of serious long-term damage that seems far away, right? I mean, the rest of your life, man, that's the rest of your life. I'm here about the here and now. Don't really worry about that. We'll figure that out later. I've got something great going. I want to hold on to it, you know?
Yeah,
I think that gets made. Those trades get made all the time. You know, you've seen, or at least I've seen, many a fighter who shouldn't be in the ring anymore, who are still doing it when they are a shadow of their former selves, and somebody ought to grab them out if need be and be like, "You shouldn't be doing this anymore. You really, really shouldn't."
Yeah. Yeah. You see that in, not so much in the NFL because people will get cut when they're not able to perform at that high level anymore, but they are also putting their bodies on the line for that inch, right? We see that in Any Given Sunday.
It's the gladiator mentality, and I got to respect a certain amount of it, but at the same time, I mean, they are sacrificing their bodies for your entertainment and for their own lifestyle. So,
right,
you know, it's their choice to make.
Yeah, and part of it's admirable, you know, like you want to, because like the Rocky, I swear we're gonna bring you in.
No, you're good. I'm just listening.
But there is also that like mind over matter aspect where whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Right. So sometimes we can do things and accomplish things by sheer force of will beyond what we think our bodies are capable of. And you can push yourself to do that. I remember doing that in marathons, right? Like I'm just a regular guy and 90% of a marathon's ahead, you know, like, yeah, you got to have your body, you know, acclimated to it, and you got to like practice running and all this stuff, you build up to it. But when it comes down to it, like whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Like you have to mentally push yourself to get past it, to go beyond what you think you could do. And I see that kind of as an element of these things as well. Like you want to prove you're tough, prove that you can take it on. Consequences kind of be damned. And I can totally see that mentality, especially they always say like when you're in your 20s, you are willing to make those sacrifices physically that you're going to pay for in your 40s.
Yeah. Yeah. You say that in pro athletes all the time. And for this guy, obviously the rest of his entire life, dramatically changing his lifestyle. I can imagine being able to hear and then not being able to hear, but I can't, I mean, you can plug your ears and whatever and kind of sort of experience it, or you close your eyes and pretend to be blind. But you're not feeling that sense of despair, right? That comes from actually happening. You really have to deal with it because, you know, you can just pull out these earplugs. You know, you can open your eyes and see again. That's a whole different psychological thing. It's right. And to willingly do that to yourself, that's, I don't know if that's just willful ignorance or like you're saying, mind over matter, or just consequences be damned. I'm going to go out on my shield. Or it's just, I mean, there's also the aspect that he was an addict and doing this thing with this girl, you know, got him through his addiction. And he like the lifestyle became his new addiction, right? Like drumming and whatever, but it was more of a positive thing than obviously shooting heroin all day. Right. So he wanted to hold on to this thing that saved his life, basically.
Mm, which is an emotional attachment. Yeah. All right. Well, I think this is a good time to bring you in, Rocky. So you're a musician. What did you see in his motivations here to continue going on despite the physical consequences? And I think that Robert brought up a good point with him viewing his relationship with the lead singer as saving him from something that he was doing before and that he wanted to hold on to that.
Well, first of all, I want to start off because I actually played in a band with a drummer who was deaf. And so whenever I was offered to come in and do this movie and I watched the trailer for it, it immediately hit home for me because the drummer for my most successful band was deaf. And he, I'm not quite sure. I know that he had hearing when he was a kid, and he was deaf enough that he... you know, would read lips. So like we'd be at shows and stuff, you'd lean in, you know, naturally to try to yell into someone's ear at a loud show. And he'd constantly be backing up because he had to read your lips. And so he was pretty deaf, pretty hearing impaired. You know, he didn't really like any of those labels put on him. I remember one time he got super mad. A friend of ours tried to, you know, do sign language and stuff to him, and he really pissed him off. So, but the dude was a phenomenal drummer, probably one of the best drummers I've ever played with. You know, held in some of the highest regard in the local community where I'm at. And it wasn't just because he's a deaf guy that plays drums. It's because he's just a badass drummer. The only issue was really, you know, he would fall off because he counted so well. He would fall off sometimes and it made it hard to, you know, kind of get back on board. But I mean, a lot of that just comes from being able to set him up right. You know, he was really shy about having people turn the monitors up for him because he didn't want special treatment or anything. But, yeah, it's one of these things, like whenever I saw the drummer who was deaf, it immediately like, you know, hit home with me. So I was like, this is, you know, pretty badass idea that I want to, you know, check out. Now, as far as like the drive for music, you know, if you're a musician, this is just something that's like in your blood. Like I, you know, You know, as some of the people that have been on or seen me on the show before, you know, I've been in and out of prison before, and having those extended period of time away from music, even in treatment centers and stuff. And still something I always came back to, even whenever I was locked up, I still wrote music. I still wrote lyrics, treatment centers. I still wrote lyrics. It was just a thing that is, it's in me. It'll never die. I'll never stop. You know, I mean, even when I'm old, I'll still be making music. I mean, I still want to go tour and do stuff right now like that. It's just a thing that if you are a musician, that's just a drive that you have. And in 2007, I was nearly stabbed to death by a guy at a party when the fight broke out. We wound up going at each other, and he got me in my hand and cut a nerve and an artery in my hand up here. So see, I can't like put my hand together and stuff. Those are the only fingers that move. And this is my finger in hand for my guitar. So it made learning guitar really hard to do once again. You know, I had to kind of relearn what I was doing. And so once again, I see this happening, and it's one of these things, like I get the guy's drive, you know, I can still play, I can still do this. I just got to figure out a way to get around doing it. And, you know, I wanted to take shortcuts so many times, you know, I even quit going because they told me that I would never be able to get, you know, my feeling or my, you know, the ability to do that back. So, I mean, it's one of those things where you stop and you start trying to figure out a better way to do it or a different way to do it. But, you know, when you're told you know, that thing won't ever happen again, it takes a little bit of time just to kind of cope with it. And granted, losing your hearing as a drummer versus, you know, the stuff in my hand, it's not exactly the same thing, but it's close enough, because for a little while I thought I wasn't going to be able to play really ever again. And I still remember the first song that I wrote after I started playing again. And it really only used these two fingers because the other fingers didn't work very well. And yeah, so I mean, I totally get it. Garth Brooks actually has a song about the rodeo and about, you know, getting beat to shit like you guys were talking about, and still just going back and going to the rodeo, and, you know, kind of what that drive is. And, you know, he says, you know, it's dust, blood, it's the, you know, it's the gold, you know, and the buckle and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, really in Oxbowdy, it's like, it's a thrill, you know, and I like playing live and stuff, but the best thing to me is whenever you're with a group of people and you have this baseline idea for a song and it comes to fruition, and you watch it kind of become this new thing, you know, with all these different people kind of involved, and you see all their different characteristics and styles come into play. And then one of the coolest things you can have live is, you know, whenever you look out into the crowd and you can see people like singing the words to your song. You know, this is not a song that's on the radio or anything. These are people that only know the song from either buying your CD or going to enough of your shows. So,
nice.
You know, there's just this drive that comes from, you know, playing music that you don't want to stop. And whenever you can't do it anymore, and so much of your life is entrenched in this idea of music, I mean, yeah, the desperation certainly ensues. I thought the movie was fantastic. Really. I was, to be honest, I was expecting something kind of that we were just going to dig on and really crack hard on, but it was actually a surprisingly really, really, really good movie. The elements with the addiction, I thought they were seeds that were laid that didn't pay off very well. The only point in time where they really paid off was after he got the treatment, and then he came back to try to borrow money from the house manager. It was one of these weird things where he's like, well, you know, this is addict behavior. And it's like, okay, that was a little rough trying to, you know, bring that part back in. I thought there was gonna be more payoff. I kind of was waiting for him to relapse in some way. And I don't think that it paid off the way that it should have, but I mean, that's really more or less just nitpicking.
Yeah. About that, I wanted to say that, in the opening of the movie, it says, you know, violence, drug use, whatever, like the warnings.
Yeah.
And so the whole time I'm like, okay, so he's going to relapse or something, and it never happened. So I'm like, drug use, what are they talking about?
They also said nudity, I thought.
Like the two cigarettes he smoked or whatever. I mean,
what? So the whole time I'm thinking he's gonna relapse, like, and that's like when he was selling his gear, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
He's gonna get all this money with the intent of getting these implants, but he's gonna relapse.
Yeah. Now when he got the implants though, and like, so first of all, the movie did a phenomenal job with the audio. I mean, you said it won an award for the audio. Like when they were moving back and forth between what it's like to hear and you could really feel like the despair of what was going on. And even his, like, his blatant rage whenever he starts destroying all the albums because he can't hear them anymore. Like, you know, that, that aggression, you know, because aggression is a secondary emotion. So that, that fear and that frustration and that, you know, just turmoil that, you know, manifests itself in a, you know, just a rage like that. It, it, like, as soon as it was happening, I was like, wow, like this, it had some really powerful parts like that. And the transition between being able to hear, I really liked whenever they were all sitting around the table, you have this whole deaf community and it's going back and forth between what they can hear and what a person sitting at the table would hear.
Right.
And it was just this, it's these phenomenal moments where they really are able to contrast the two really, really well. And so I thought that that, that whole part of the movie was done, was executed really, really well.
This might make me a terrible person, but when that dinner scene was happening and they were going through, you know, the silent experience of it and then the not silent experience of it, I was like, damn, they're loud.
I chuckled and I thought it was funny, but it was not necessarily, it's funny because of the despair. It's funny because, like, just to this group of people, this is just what a normal day is like. This is what a normal dinner table, setting is like. And, you know, they don't know exactly what they're doing, you know what I mean? Because they can't hear it that well. But I mean, it's one of those things like where they're not just being loud because they can't hear, but hitting the table and using these types of vibrations is actually another form of communicating between them. It's almost like inflections in your voice or whatnot. And right. So it was just really interesting. It was really, I really, really liked it. In fact, the only thing I didn't like is I didn't like the end. I thought that the end didn't pay off very well. And it really came down to be just like another one of these, like, well, it is an Amazon movie, but another one of these Amazon or made for TV movies that does really good and then, like, just rushes the ending and doesn't give that payoff that was built, you know?
Yeah, I think the ending's a little bit ambiguous enough to where you can read it a couple of different ways. Like, if he, how I charitably interpret the ending is that he goes to France and surprises the girl, and she'd been doing really well. And his presence being there again reminds her of their past situation. And she starts, like, having that nervous, you know, harming, self-harm kind of thing happening. And he's also realizing that he's taking this shortcut to where he can't experience sound and music and her singing with her dad playing piano the way that he had thought. And so he ends up leaving to not go back. Like, he leaves that life and he's not coming back to her because he realizes that his presence is causing her harm. And then he also removes the implants to finally accept his new situation and adapting to it. And that was another question I wanted to bring up, was the approach by the guy who runs the house, where he's like, we don't view this as a disability. We don't view this as a thing to fix. We view this as a way to be. You know, and I was torn on that because I'm like, well, there are certain things you can do and you wouldn't just, like, not remedy, you know, anything just because you happen to be in a certain situation. Right. So I guess back to my point was, like, if I read the movie as he makes the realization that he's causing her harm by remaining with her and that he needs to accept his now being deaf and then he's going to move out into the world accepting this and moving on, I kind of view that as maybe a good ending. Versus him just being out there taking the things out just to, like, go for a walk, sit on the park, you know, sit on a park bench. And then he's going to go back to the girlfriend's house and they're going to, like, try to, you know, start their band up again or whatever.
Well, yeah, I wonder. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, of course he thought, you know, he could go back and be around other people. And then he kind of came to this realization that he couldn't be around other people in the same capacity that he could before. And I don't, the thing I didn't like that is I don't think it sends the correct message, because once again, being around people that were deaf, they can be around people that aren't deaf. It's not like they have to be isolated from society like that. Now the ending I thought was him finding that, that being still moment that the house manager was talking about. Mm-hmm. He kept telling him, you got to find how to be still. And that's kind of what I interpreted when he took everything off and everything was quiet. you know, there was nothing happening. That was kind of that moment of still that he found. But you know, when they're talking about not seeing it as a disability, I really relate because I don't find substance abuse to be a disease at all. I mean, obviously they classify it as a disease. So, I mean, it is what it is, but you know, I mean, I can't wake up and, you know, not have, you know, bipolar disorder anymore. You know, I can't wake up and just not have cancer anymore. But, you know, I woke up one day and I just decided I wasn't going to stick needles in my arms anymore. You know what I mean? There's a strong difference between you know, what addiction is and what we typically deem a disease to be. And so once again, I don't live my life by this idea that I'm a victim and I have some kind of disease, you know? And I think that that's a pretty powerful thing, a lot more powerful than people that believe that they have a disease of addiction. And I think that that's, in one case, that's very powerful for him to not believe that, you know, that this is a disability. At the same time, while he says that it's not a disability, he still continues to isolate himself and the rest of the people from the outside world as if they are different. So he's almost like living in this world of disability in order to make it not seem like such a disability. It's a very, very weird thing, and kind of, it has benefits, but it's also kind of culty at the same time.
And you're referring to the guy running the house, right?
Say what?
The guy
running the house. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can totally see that, but I also like your take on it that, you know, if you consider it like an affliction or a medical thing, then you can be a victim to it. Versus taking on the personal responsibility for your own self and your own actions and achieving despite this obstacle. Right. So anyway,
You can do great things with that. You can do great things if you're deaf. I mean, it doesn't have to be a disability in the way of like, I can't do things. You can still do plenty of stuff. I mean, hearing is not everything. I mean, it's not, you know. Blind people do plenty of stuff. You can go on YouTube right now and watch people that have these disabilities do amazing, amazing things. So,
right. You take away one of your senses and you heighten the other ones. I mean, it's like the Marvel superhero Daredevil, or like that episode of Seinfeld where the Jerry and they get the deaf girl to read lips at a party. So they have like some kind of secret weapon to like get some information they wouldn't otherwise have known.
Mulva? Is that
no, not that episode? It's a different episode. But Jerry and George are like, take her to a party so that they can she can tell them what they're talking about. If I think he was worried about somebody talking about him. You know how George is. Anyway, the guy that ran the place. I like what you guys are saying about, you know, disabilities versus afflictions versus whatever, and like there are positives and negatives. But yet he is like keeping this enclave separate from everybody. I wonder, because he kind of like turns his nose up at the main character using technology to enhance his life. Whereas I'm like, you know, technology exists exactly to do that, to make your life better. We use it all the time everywhere. Why is he balking at this one instance? Well, he has kind of a soft spot for this one aspect that you're deaf and you should be able to revel and enjoy that. And it's nothing to be solved. But what does he feel about a robotic arm that somebody is a limbless person, a disability to be solved by technology or not? Or should he revel in the fact that he's got no arms,
or a parka in winter,
or a parka in winter, or a telephone to be able to talk to somebody over distances? It's a limitation that human beings have. Or a computer to be able to talk to somebody over distances. That's a limitation.
Well, he had a computer. Really,
yeah.
That was a no-no.
And it had Facebook.
Well.
Or a wheelchair for somebody that can't otherwise walk. I mean, what does this guy, you know, he's just a very selective Luddite. He's just like, no, just about the hearing implants. I have a problem with that. Every other piece of technology is fine. But it seemed
He's
very Jim Jones philosophical to have the laptop with internet.
It's very Jim. Yeah, it's very philosophical sage. Like you shouldn't see this as a limitation. You should be okay and at peace with yourself, because he's dealing with somebody who's got a lot of inner turmoil. I get that He's dealing with somebody who's having a big, massive change in their life. He's trying to guide them through this turbulent point in their life to a more peaceful end. I understand that, but it still seems a little bit weird that, I mean, what if he gets to a peaceful point in his life and he's happy? And in the movie, he kind of did seem that way. Like he was learning sign language. He was interacting with these other deaf people. He's having a great time. Like he was laughing and having a party and like they were playing games and he was really getting involved in the group and the community.
And it seemed like he had helped that one girl with a tattoo and all kinds of stuff.
Right. He was kind of at peace with himself. And then he was like, and I still want to be able to hear. What's wrong with that? From my perspective, why not? Like, I know a lot of people will balk at like cybernetic implants and being able to enhance your senses that way or whatever. And I can understand the reasons why you wouldn't want to be able to have people hack into that or whatever, or turn yourself, you know, transhuman or anything like that. But it's such a blurry line from using a cell phone to using the next step in technology. Why do you suddenly balk at this as opposed to that? He's like an Amish guy that is like, well, technology up until 1800. And then anything past that, that's my arbitrary year, 1800. That's the way the Lord intended it, to stop at 1800 technology. Anything past 1800 is bad. Everything before 1800 is good. The wheel, solid. I like it. Solid. Houses.
Fire kind of.
Fire, a little bit iffy. But automobile, internal combustion engine, no, bad. It's kind of an arbitrary thing. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, in actuality, all you're doing is combining horse and buggy and fire, and you make automobile.
Yeah, exactly. You're already okay with those. Just take the next step.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right that he's selective about what he's accepting of technologically, but I also think that he's doing that sage-like philosophical thing, like, this is the issue that this person and this group of people is dealing with that makes them different than before, you know, than how they were before. And so this is the thing that I need to help guide them through. And here's the structure by which I do that.
But he did that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the most part, yeah,
he already did that. I mean, I can understand him at the very beginning going, no. Here, you got to get okay with being deaf for now. But then once he had done that, and then he decided, well, I still want to be able to hear. Yeah, even after I'm totally at peace with myself, or somewhat at peace. Like, he was more at peace for sure. Mm-hmm. And then the guy was still like, nah, get the fuck out if you're going to do that, dumbass shit. Fuck off. Yeah. It's like, really? You're not gonna support me in my choice? He's like, nah, you're being an addict now. Really? I'm addicted to being able to hear? All right, I guess.
Well, no, the whole addict thing comes from the behavior of selling off everything to achieve something, like because you're so obsessive and compulsive, you're so obsessed with something that you basically sell off everything. So he sold off everything, but then his idea was to come back to the guy who wasn't supporting this thing that he was doing, and then tried to basically beg him and prod him for money. And so, like, because see, whenever he's talking about, oh, well, you know, I can get the money from this, you know, my girl's, you know, rich dad and stuff, like the whole addict in my head, or the you know, kind of reverse role of the addict would be like, well, then, you know, if you can get the money from him, then why the hell are you asking this guy who's running this house? You can just go ask her. Now you're like robbing Peter to pay Paul at this point, you know, and how desperate he seemed, you know what I mean, at that point in time, you know, like, what was it, Super Troopers, you know, desperation is a stinky cologne. And, you know, so, I mean, it's one of these things like that behavior was there. And once again, that's the only time that addict stuff really paid off, other than the house manager basically being an alcoholic. So, you know, able to have that kind of relationship there, like that, you know, thing that well, makes them more tight.
The whole place there was for deaf people who were also addicts, right? Which seems like,
did I miss that?
Super specialized.
Yeah.
to me, like, the market provides, but man, I can't believe that there's a house for deaf people who happen to also be addicts.
Well, checking some boxes. He did drive what, 4 or 5 states to get there.
Right. Yeah. And his sponsor found a place that could help him with both issues.
Yeah. The market did provide. They just put him out in the middle of nowhere and kind of made it a sort of culty thing.
Yeah. Now, movie wise, I think that I would have liked to see more of the addict thing happening, you know, like maybe establish it more in the beginning. So we see some of the arc of his relationship with the girl, like gets him out of it, or we see a relapse, or maybe both things happen. But we just get allusions to it. And I think it loses some of its impact. Like you were saying, the payoffs just really aren't there. They try to draw this connection with the addict behavior of selling everything to try to achieve something and then trying to like talk to people to get money out of them. And my brother, he went through a situation like that. And so he would sweet talk you and tell you anything you needed to hear and how he was turning his life around and everything was going to be great. And then he would get money or get whatever, you know, and then the next thing you'd hear from him, he's back in the, you know, situation. And so it got to a point where we were just like, no, I don't care what you say. No, the answer is no. We're not going to enable this behavior anymore, you know? And so.
But if your brother, who was an addict, lost his hearing and wanted to be able to hear again.
Yeah, I don't think like, I'd go. This is like, behavior you wanted to hear again.
Fuck off.
Get out of my house.
Get the hell out of here, addict.
I know you.
You
I know
and
you helped Dev
hear again.
I know you helped Dev school kids, but get the fuck out.
I could see, and maybe the movie could have gone here. I could see somebody using this as the reason I need the money, but I'm going to use it for this other thing.
That could be, I could see that.
Here's a
that
plausible, would be a little bit more, give me
like,
money.
Yeah, right. Like the boy who cried wolf too many times, and they're like, no, this is just the latest scam. Or even if you are deaf, yeah, you're just going to turn around and inject it. So did she
bail on him, or did she really have care and concern that she wanted him to get better?
She left because she was convinced that it would be better for him if she wasn't there.
I know what the movie did, but I'm asking what, because I mean, she obviously she's an addict. She can bullshit her way around anything as well. Was she fearful about her dream of becoming a musician and a touring musician and that this was going to hinder it, considering the fact that she still went on and tried to do her own solo thing by using loop pedals and stuff like what he saw online? But what, like, did she basically kick him to the curb, or did she really want him to get help? You know what I mean? Like a little bit deeper into what her motives were, because it never really explained if her motives were genuine or malicious.
I mean, she did seem surprised to see him again, and there was like this almost going through the motions of
like, why, oh, yeah, like, why
so
are you
good
back
to see you?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's how it very much felt to me. That was like, oh,
I thought there was going to be another.
Hey,
I thought there was
going to
be another man. I thought there was going to be another man for sure, and there wasn't, but I really did think there was. So
yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I've said this before, but a devoted woman is like a unicorn. They don't really exist. Most women, especially, I fully much expected her to have moved on.
Especially after they made the point, like, wait for me. He said that to her.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't really understand. Did we... Is it said specifically in the movie how long he was there? I get the impression that it was at least a couple of months.
Well, he learned sign language pretty fast if that was the case. I mean, he obviously wasn't fluent in it, but he was able to communicate pretty well by the time he went and got the surgery and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm guessing at least like 6 to 9 months, if not a year.
Yeah, because he had to get the money and then the surgery, and then there was a 4 or 6 week wait
recovery or something like that too. He had the recovery time too, right?
Yeah, I think in the beginning at least they say, well, this is going to take at least 2 months, but it seemed like it was longer than that anyway. Yeah. I don't know,
but yeah, I mean, that's another thing that didn't quite pay off. They sort of set up this thing where, okay, she's leaving in his best interest, but then out of sight, out of mind, and then he goes and chases her. You think, okay, well, how does that play out? You know,
yeah, especially with her moving on and, you know, probably improving her life. Like when he sees her again in what, Toronto or wherever it is,
Paris.
Like
I think she's, it's in France. I think they're in Paris.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So she's like all cleaned up and feeling better and not cutting herself. And then when he comes back and she's all nervous about the thought of going back out and doing everything over with him again. Yeah. Like there's
that
obvious.
Could be- And that nervous. Could be it too. I mean, when I was in the treatment center, we had to do things like call each other out for like eating peanut butter when you're not supposed to, you know, real knick-knacky BS. And it always seems so weird. Like, why, like, this is so irrelevant. Why would I even do this? And the whole idea is like, well, if you can't even call the, in this controlled environment, if you can't even call this guy out for eating peanut butter when he's not supposed to, then if whenever you're at the grocery store and you come walking around the corner and you run smack dab into your dealer and he says, hey, what's your number? How the hell are you going to be able to be assertive enough to say, hey, I'm not doing that. Or, you know what I mean? Get yourself out of the situation. More likely, even out of a fear, you'll just automatically snap to and give them the number unless you've exercised these muscles to be able to act a certain way. And so once again, you kind of see that fear whenever he shows back up, whether she wanted him to leave and get out in the first place, you know, kind of get away from her, or if, you know, because she was scared because he was acting out irrationally, maybe she wanted to continue to do music without him because, you know, it was apparent that he couldn't play, whatever the reason might have been. But yeah, whenever she shows back up and she's talking about him hurting himself and whatnot, definitely there's that fear, you know, that I'm, you know, or at least that's the way I perceived it, that I would be going back to doing those things, you know what I mean, now that this guy's around. It's almost a trigger at that point.
Right. Like that things would go back to the old ways, even if they would be different somehow. You don't know that.
Yeah. It seems like there's all these areas where you could have explored and made more of a story arc, but then you end up making a 3 or 4 hour movie out of what, you know, is really just a 2 hour movie.
Well, yeah, you definitely could have went a lot of different ways with that. And I think that they tried to do a lot of that kind of stuff, or like his relationship. See, cause they were harping on like his desperation to like even see her by the mold. Like, I think they showed him going in and checking emails and stuff like 3 or 4 mm-hmm. times. And the other thing that never paid off is he never caught him. Like all that, like looking and stuff and trying to like, you know, check to see if the guy was coming. Like there was never like, you would thinking that like, okay, he's going to get caught. You know what I mean?
Because, or even maybe be mentioned at the confrontation at the table where he's yep. like, you're acting like an addict. And you know, here's the 3 things I've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. But he just got away with pulling the wool over his eyes the whole time. So almost like, so the whole part, that whole section of the movie was made for him to be able to get a lens to the outside world. That's kind of the whole thing. So it almost told the story of what she was doing through the desperation through like his eyes, you know what I mean? Through like the desperation of wanting to see what she's doing. And I, once again, that's another element that was just, I think poorly executed, you know, I think it could have been done a lot better.
Yeah, but overall, I think I agree that this is definitely a movie worth watching, and the performance is strong. You know, I think that maybe there's a couple of missed opportunities, but you know, we're not the ones making the film; we're the ones talking about it. So,
yeah, this movie definitely rests on, lives or dies on the performance of the main character, and I think he did a solid job.
I think he nailed it. I think he did a really good job. I think what you were talking about, he went and did some like drumming lessons and, you know, really went. Those are some of the people that execute some of the best characters whenever they really go through the motions of learning about the character that they're playing versus just kind of, you know, I don't know, Tom Cruising it, you know. So
Tom Cruise is great. Does his own stunts. Jumps on couches. But anyway, we should probably start to wind this one down. We are approaching about an hour. Any final points or notes that either of you guys have?
Man, I took 0 notes on this movie. So, yeah, no, I don't have any. Although I think we've had an excellent discussion.
Yeah, I didn't take any notes on it either. I watched it one time. Then I watched some clips this morning. Whenever I got to work, I was going through my paperwork this morning. But overall, I think that the there wasn't really a whole lot to kind of really dissect and really like go at, especially for me. You know, I kind of, as I was watching the movie, I was already picking up on the addictive stuff. I was already picking up on the stuff related to the guy that I had in my band who was deaf and played drums. I was already picking up on the musician, you know, elements. And so it really was kind of, you know, as I was going along, I was like, okay, that, you know, that makes sense. Oh, okay. It should have looked like this, or this is what I would have done different, or, you know, I can relate to that. So all those things were just kind of registering as the movie was going. But yeah, like you guys said, I think the movie was really strong, and I think it was really strong because, Riz or whatever his name is. I would be excited to see him. If I saw his name on another movie, I'd probably watch it because he was did such a good job in this movie. So I'm hoping to see him continue to do well because he did really, really good in that movie.
All right. That seems like he could stamp a rating out of 10, maybe a number of toms and cymbals out of 10. So what do you give this?
I'm going to go with an 8. I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. I think that the missed opportunities were there, and it is what it is. You know, I think one of the things is that, like, made for TV movies, which is kind of what these Amazon movies and stuff correlate to nowadays. I'm just expecting that the market just get better. And while this movie does excel above and beyond most of them, I think that, you know, just because it's better, it's not as big of a piece of shit as the rest of these movies that come out. I can't sway it too far that way. I think that there was some missed opportunities that would have made the movie a lot better, but definitely an 8 out of 10.
All right. Yeah. Very good. And I want to just mention that while it does say an Amazon original or whatever, the movie actually was already made and existed, and then Amazon picked it up for distribution. Oh. So it's not like Amazon said, "Hey, filmmaker guy, make this movie," or pitch us this movie and see if we want to promote it. I'm pretty sure it already existed and had been screened and all those things. And then they were like, okay, we're going to,
Well, that is definitely an 8 out of 10. If it wasn't a made for TV style movie, because that's exactly what I interpreted the movie to be. Wait, wasn't it a foreign movie though?
Yeah, it's the Belgian filmmaker. I think the scenes that are supposed to be in Europe are supposed to be in Paris are shot in Belgium, and a lot of it's all shot in New England, Massachusetts area for the U.S. portion. And I also think, I was reading a little bit about it on the Wikipedia, which I could post that on the show notes page, but they did not shoot it concurrently, or consecutively. So it was like a couple of days here and there over the course of several months. And so you can imagine, like, I mean, there are time jumps in the movie. Like, he's at this place for several months. So him having like different lengths of hair and having his like blonde hair kind of grow out and all that is like kind of blends right in with that. And I think that worked along with how they shot the movie, you know, just spread out over time.
The one other point that I'd like to make is that whole scene where they had him in the room to write, just to write and be still, that whole scene was, I really personally liked, I thought it was really cool because, being in treatment centers, they have you do all different types of weird, what would the right word be? Like weird, exercises, like for
rituals almost.
No. So there was a point in time where they limited the way I could talk. So, basically they tried to say that I danced around topics too much, and I would basically try to circumvent any type of responsibility for my actions by basically trying to give people like a runaround by talking. And so the idea was, well, you can only limit your sentences to 10 words, basically an exercise. And in order to, it's not like you're going to be punished physically or anything if you don't do these things, but in treatment centers, if you want to progress to the program, you have to, you know, you have to play the game, you know. So and then they also added in there that I needed to use at least in one conversation I had to use an I feel statement in order to gain a, you know, more connection with feelings. So I actually had to carry a feeling sheet, and I had to open it up and basically pinpoint feelings. I couldn't just use bad, sad, mad, glad, nothing like that. So once again, whenever they have them doing these things, it's like once again relatable. Like, okay, there's some other meaning behind why they're having him do this. It's not, hey, just sit in this, we're just gonna lock you in this room with a pencil and a notepad, you know what I mean?
Right Okay, yeah, that makes some sense. And it's almost like they sort of make you do these things that feel kind of dumb or degrading, and you could definitely feel that he felt that way. Like, he even says, like, this is stupid, what am I doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if we really get like the midterm payoff for that. Like, at the end, we get the payoff of him like finally accepting that silent moment that was supposed to be what was being taught here. But we don't really get a intermediate, like, while he's still experiencing being in that room.
Yeah, there's like, no arc in it. There's I deny like no it epiphany. And I accept it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, there's no midpoint, I guess. So anyway, That's my take on that.
That was just another point I just thought of too. So I figured I'd throw that out there.
All right. So Robert, you got a final summary and review in you and a number of toms and cymbals in your kit.
Yeah, baby. So Sound of Metal. It's definitely I think it's a character story that's going to hit you harder or softer based on your own personal life experience. You know, if you're someone who has experienced a great loss, or if you've become disabled through no fault of your own, or maybe through your life choices, it's definitely going to, I think, resonate more with you. Although, you know, to some extent, we can all identify with loss, of course, if you've been on this earth any amount of time. But I think it's going to hit you harder, like Rocky has said, as it's, you know, he's had personal experience with addiction and the music scene and not being able to, you know, compose like you otherwise normally would, even though it's like this part of you, it's part of your artistic expression that you have to get it out of you. It's a personal story. You really get a sense of his emotions. The main character, the actor, does an excellent job of portraying that. Like you guys were talking about in that sitting room where he smashes that donut and he's punching that donut. And I was like, yeah, fuck that donut, man. I had to totally get that. I completely understand where you're coming from. You're sitting in this room and you got this donut and you're just going to smash the shit out of it.
And then he puts it back.
And then he's like, oh, okay, that was stupid. I smashed this donut I was going to eat. Yeah, okay, that was dumb.
No, he smashed it a second.
Yeah. I was right the first time.
It's that addict behavior.
I haven't been addicted to drugs, but I've been addicted to other things in my life. I do understand somewhat. I haven't been through any kind of a rehab, so I don't know those kind of silly exercises that they put you through. But I definitely felt his frustration. I felt his anger. I felt, you know, his sadness. I felt a loss. And I felt the loss of, you know, it's kind of like those war movies where you're still in love with this woman, but now she's far away from you. Like we just did a movie, Jarhead, where a main character, or not the main character, but yeah, no, the main character, he's like worried about his relationship with his girlfriend because she's all the way over there and he's all the way over here. And does
rightfully
she,
is it so. Still,
is it still as strong as it was, you know, and they get information about, you know, what these girls are, you know, are they spending time with X, Y, and Z? He's hearing stories about this man that she's talking to. He's like, what's going on there? Why am I hearing these stories now? And I've, you know, that very much hit home to me. One of my relationships shortly before it ended, I started hearing stories about a coworker. And I'm like, okay, what's going on there? Oh, okay. I keep hearing this story about this guy. And she ended up ending it with me and going out with that guy. So yeah, it's a very relatable and definitely a worrisome thing for anybody. But so yeah, I found ways to relate with the story. I didn't hit me as hard as it hit Rocky. I can understand his score of an 8. I had a less of an interest, I guess, in the story. It hit me less hard. I still appreciate that it would hit him hard or other people less hard. So I'm going to go with I still don't think it's like the most engaging film. There's definitely some very slow points. If you're not engaged with the main character, you're going to be less interested in what's happening. And there was just enough not happening, less interesting things happening that it lost my interest for a significant part of the film. So I'm going to have to go with like a 6.5 hearing aids out of 10. I can understand an 8. I can understand someone giving this a 10. I can also understand someone giving this a 2. It just, for me, it hit me in the 6.5 range. That's where it hit me. So it's a perfectly well done movie. I just think it's not for everybody.
Yeah. I think that this is very much a subjective take. Like some people are going to hate it. Some people are going to love it. And there's going to be some in between. I'm kind of one of those in betweens where I'm glad that I watched it. I found that there were a number of buildups that didn't pay off and that there were some missed opportunities in the movie and in the story arc. They jumped around a little bit, which was kind of unfortunate. But the performance overall by the lead actor was really, really strong. And so I appreciated that. I don't know, like, if there was really much of a story really happening other than guy experiences an issue, starts dealing with it in one way, but he tries to shortcut, you know, short time preference kind of way, and then is disappointed in that. And then finally at the end realizes that the stillness and the acceptance is really the answer. And I mean, maybe if I look at it that way, maybe it's more favorable, but it's also shot in kind of an interesting, almost guerrilla documentary style. So that kind of stands out a little bit. The audio that's really well done, where you really feel that jarring experience of going between the non-hearing world and the hearing world. So overall, I think that it's a well done movie, and it's definitely worth watching. So I'm going to give it a kick drum, three toms, a crash, a hi-hat, and a ride. So what's that? Is that seven or is that eight? It's pretty good.
You have basically a full kit.
Yeah, pretty much a full kit.
You have more of a kit than what he had.
I got a couple extra zildjians or pasties in there.
So yeah, I used to know some stuff. Symbol or two. Yeah.
Anyway, overall, it gave us something worthy of discussion, as is your book, Rocky. So why don't we plug your book one more time and then tell people where they can find your website and other things that you do.
Well, the book is The Fat Freak Guide to Songwriting. And like I said, you can pick it up on Amazon right now. Like I said, the ebook is $2.99. The paperback is $9.99. And yeah, it's basically just a soft introduction. Although I will say that Nick White from what is the podcast again? I haven't listened to it in a while. Anyways, Nick White, he's another podcaster, libertarian musician, phenomenal guy. He writes music, doesn't write lyrics, but he read the book. I had him help me out with some of the just kind of another musician's take on it. And he said that he actually gained a newfound respect for the art of songwriting. So I think that there is a little bit of something in there for anybody who's a musician of any kind, and possibly even somebody who is just into art overall, possibly help you be able to figure out, you know, look at things a little bit different than maybe you might have looked at it before. So other than that, that's basically about all I got going on. I do have a new project out called Project 11. That's project with 11. The L is replaced with two ones. We released a cover, like a groove metal cover of Jump Around. We're getting ready to release some other stuff too. So go ahead and go check that out. That's on all of all streaming platforms as well. So.
All right, very good. And we will have the link to your book on the show notes page that can be found at lastnighters.com/182. It'll be an affiliate link. So be warned, everyone, you will get it at the same price you would otherwise get it, but we'll get a small, small cut.
That means they're taking my money. They're taking my money.
And Nick is, I've been talking with him recently, actually. His podcast is The Status Quo.
That's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, and we're talking about doing an episode with him pretty soon. We've got a couple of potential movies in the hopper, and each one of them is actually pretty appealing. So I won't reveal which one we're going to land on yet, but we will have him on in a couple of weeks as soon as we can get that scheduled.
And let me know, Nick is an absolute phenomenal guy. Nick is fantastic. So I absolutely adore Nick. Great guy.
All right, very good. Well, I'll tell him he comes highly recommended. So
he comes what was it, five, you know, 10 hearing aids, right?
he's a full kit. All right, you vouch for him.
Yeah, good guy.
All right, very good. Well, Robert, speaking of good guys, we're gonna have a good guy back on next week. Sweet. In honor of Pride Month, we're gonna slip in the back end of Pride Month here.
Nice.
A little ditty called The Birdcage, starring Robin Williams and Nathan Lane. And this will be with James Gentleman, the great James Gentleman of Blackbird podcast. And we
very
were
good
with him a while back, and he was on for High Rise a while back, which was a very, very good episode for not a very, very good movie.
If I recall, Birdcage takes place in like Miami.
Sounds about right.
So there should be some tan individuals there. So I'm looking to see some of my fellow people. That'll be nice to be among, you know, my people. See some representation on screen. You know, that's how I identify. That's how I
validate myself. So to Tanfinity and beyond, baby.
All right. You're keeping up this shtick. That's all right. That's okay. All right. Well,
this is my new reality, Daniel. I don't have a choice.
such good stuff. All right. Well, hey, there's more great content like this coming up in the Kathleen Turner Overdrive, also available for Patreon supporters. Go to lastnerds.com/Patreon. And let's listen to Robert for a couple of other ways that you can support the show right about now. My fuck's little brother.
Shit. Okay, I can make something up here. So you can leave a like. You could subscribe. You can leave a review. We are happy about reviews. Daniel likes to talk about them. He likes to read them in the shows.
Months later.
Months later after the fact. So after you've left a review and then forgotten that you've left a review and stopped listening to the show, Daniel will call attention to the review and be like, check out this review. This was a positive review or a negative review. I think we've done one or two of those.
Got a few of those, yeah.
But those are always fun. No matter either way you swing it, we enjoy that kind of content. So that is definitely a way you can support the show. Or you can even go to the Patreon and throw us a few shekels. Anything that would otherwise loosely fall out of your pocket and you wouldn't notice, you can throw at us.
That's right. So long as you've got some money left over after filling your gas tank or trying to buy a piece of lumber, we're happy to accept it.
Oh, we're only talking to the rich people out there.
That's nice. Right. And just the change.
We accept any kind of currency, Bitcoin and lumber.
Yeah, we'll take lumber.
That's right. That's right.
We'll take your wood. Next week, Birdcage, everyone. And with that, we'll say goodnight from last night. Peace out. All right, and we're going to continue the Kathleen Turner Overdrive delay for just a bit longer so we can finish up the actual Anarchy podcast. Usually save a question for this, but I don't have one, which seems to have been the MO lately. But are there any final things that either one of you wanted to mention about this movie before we get into that Kathleen Turner Overdrive?
Well, I thought that the guy that ran the house, even though I disagreed with him, I thought that the characterization was very accurate. I mean, I haven't been to, maybe it was just in line with other movies I've seen where some guy will run some sort of an addiction house or whatever, rehab house. And they're very much focused on what they think is best for you at this time. And they're not really interested in a debate. They're like, no, we have this program. You're going to follow it if you're going to be here. And I, as a libertarian, I completely like your house, your rules. I'm willing to go along with this, even if I disagree with you about this being the best thing for me in this moment. I'll go along and see if I can get some value, even if I feel that this is, you know, stupid.
Yeah. Maybe I think that's a really good point, because sometimes you might think you know best, but that other person who has the expertise really does know best, you know, and you almost have to be, I don't want to say forced into it, but like confronted with the, hey, you're either going to be here and do this or you're not going to be here.
Right. Because you know that you're at a place of weakness, you know, you're like near rock bottom or whatever. And you have to become a humble and be like, well, maybe there's something I don't know that is going to help me. Because even though I think that I make the best choices for myself, clearly I'm at a place in my life where I have got to this point by not making the best choices. Maybe these guys do know something more than I do and they've got a point. And even though this seems stupid and dumb, I'll go along with it. And, you know, I don't know how accurate the movie portrayal was, but a lot of these programs do work for a lot of people. So there's something to it.
Right. And that really is the biggest thing. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, look, if you knew what to do, then you wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be involved in jails, institutions, and death. So that's just the way that is, you know, and you know, the old adage of, you know, if it don't apply, then let it fly, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's one of these things where, okay. So like I had to go to, AA meetings and NA meetings and stuff. And, I was forced to go through probation, but I was never big on meetings. And one of the big reasons was the idea of higher power, the idea of, you know, the thought of, because one of the first things you have to admit is that you're powerless. And I hated that. You know, I didn't think that I was powerless. I thought that if anybody had the power, that I had the power. You know what I mean? And I had a guy tell me one of the last times I went to a meeting, I had a guy tell me that that no matter what happens in my life, I won't be able to stay sober unless I follow the 12 steps, no matter what. And I just remember thinking, you know, like that's total bullshit, man. There's people that get clean and sober and you know, do amazing things that don't go to 12-step meetings. Like, this is not, there's not one way to get to this destination. And typically what I tell people when I go to treatment centers, when I go to prisons, when I go and speak to other addicts is, you know, no matter how you get there, I don't care how you get there. I don't care if you got to, I mean, I don't want you to hurt yourself, but I don't care if you got to get up and bang your head against the wall 12, 15 times a day in order to not get high. Okay. If you go to meetings, great. If it works for you, cool. If you don't go to meetings, cool. That's good too. I just care that you are clean and sober and that you live, you know, the best possible life that you could live. And, you know, you have to get with people that have, you know, done this in order to understand how to cope with life, because not using drugs is not the hard part. It's the hard part is learning how to live a normal life. And so just with losing your hearing, how to live that kind of a normal life, because whatever your reality becomes normal. And after so many years of not having your hearing, well, that becomes normal. So how do you live as a normal person in that world?
Hmm. Yeah. You know, there was a thing I sort of noticed, and this may be is part of the character, like maybe a nuance in the development of him, but he had already sort of righted himself while still being able to be in that world of playing and traveling. And it was the hearing loss that sort of drove the story forward. But he had already, prior to that, cleaned up his life, got the girlfriend, started being able to go and travel and stay off of drugs and perform. And I mean, he was like, he had done some positive changes in his life to where I'm sure that made him feel like he was already doing the right kinds of things. And that might have made the hearing loss and him wanting to still have that level of control make that a bit of conflict with the guy who was running the house.
Right. Yeah. Because he's like, hey, I'm not an addict anymore. Or I'm an addict, but I haven't touched the stuff in whatever you said, 4 or 5
yeah,
years.
4 years. Yeah. So yeah. he was an addict before he went deaf. The other guy was an addict after he became deaf.
Right.
Those are two different things, being an addict before versus being an addict after, because he began drinking because of the deafness. You know, he began to try to bury the issues that he was having, you know, with the substance abuse, then became clean.
Okay. Yeah. So it maybe makes it different, because the guy running the house was an addict because he's running away from something, but what's his name? Roz?
Riz or whatever is it.
Riz. Yeah. He's
in the movie. His name was Ruben.
Ruben. Yeah. So Ruben's more like, hey, this is the thing that's happened to me, and I've already sort of kicked this other stuff, you know? So,
and I mean, you're still treating me like an addict.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to hearing.
However, it's a stupid thing. I remember my probation officer told me one time, she said the biggest cause of relapse is romance and finance. And I told her that's a stupid cliche, because nobody said I can't pay my water bill, so I'm going to shoot up. You know, people use these things as excuses to get high, but the excuse is not the reason for the relapse. The relapse happens long before somebody finds the excuse to use. And so whenever you say it sounds nice, you know, the biggest cause of relapse is romance and finance, but it's all horse shit. You know, I mean, if you want to use, you want to use, you know what I mean? And if you're going to use, you're going to use. Those are just the decisions that people already make in their head. They just have to find the excuse to do so. So if he had used drugs because he lost his hearing, he was already planning on using drugs long before that. He just used that as the excuse to do so.
So he's waiting for the cover for the opportunity.
That's the way addiction works. Addiction's not two-dimensional like that. It's much more in depth, and an addict's mind has to be able to like trick itself. You know what I mean? Because like if you're in the midst of your addiction and you're in the midst of the denial, it's really easy to go, well, if somebody wouldn't have done this, or if this thing would have happened, or if somebody wouldn't have wronged me in this way, or if this or if that, and I'm the victim, and see, I'm doing this because of something else that happened. But it's all horseshit. I mean, it's all bullshit. You got high because you wanted to get high. You know what I mean? And in the end, that's the real reason. And you can masquerade it as whatever you want, but it's all bullshit. So
I think that's going to be my saying after this. It's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit. So.
All right. Well, hey, Rocky, this has been a lot of fun. You can stick around a little bit longer for the official Kathleen Turner Overdrive, which will be available for Patreon supporters after this. ActualAnarchy.com/Patreon. People can also find the link to your book and also your website on our show notes page at ActualAnarchy.com/239. And next week, we're going to be doing The Birdcage with James Shenman of Blackbird. And any final words for our audience before we say goodnight and get into that Kathleen Turner Overdrive?
Just thanks for listening, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Hope you will tune in next week. Got to have a good one. James is always a great guest. And thank you, Rocky, for showing up today. This was fantastic, sir. Thank you very much.
No problem. Hey, I want to thank you guys for actually suggesting a good movie. I mean, the last time we did a good movie, it was Gremlins. So
was it?
And that was my suggestion. Was my suggestion. So I'm glad you guys finally suggested a good movie. I was expecting for movie connoisseurs for you guys to be more competent with the good movies, but I'm glad we got one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we finally did do a good movie with you. Yes.
All right, we did it, everyone. We finally did it. All right, well, hey, it's been a lot of fun. We'll see you in the Kathleen Turner Overdrive right after this, and I'll say maximum for you, everyone. Peace out. Have a good night.
Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot doot. Doot doot doot. Doot doot doot.